know since I was very little. I wanted to play with cars. The firewall caved in, snapped my ankles back. It happened so fast. Made sure that the car was very safe. So I was filming a TV show. Coming home after some days were 22-hour days. I was doing a lot of intense driving. I was in situations that I normally wouldn't be in. So by the time I got home, my back was hurting, which, you know, I've had back surgery, so I didn't think anything of it.
Hi, welcome back to another episode of The Mindful Space. Today we have Sonia with us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Thank you for coming and doing this wonderful interview.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. So today we want to talk about you and your relationship with mental health. When did that relationship start?
I mean, really, I feel like it would have started, you know, from the very beginning, right? When I was born. I think that from a very young age, there was a lot of things that I went through. A lot of traumatic things, you know, similar to a lot of people's stories. I was actually born in the Fiji Islands and came here when I was 3 years old. And there was just not a good start of a life with, you know, my mom and my dad and whatnot. So with my grandparents and my mom, we decided to come over to California. I didn't decide, right? I was just taking. I'm glad they did. I'm really glad they did. So I came over here. And one of the really big starts of my mental health journey, I guess, would just be when I had broken both my ankles. I broke both my ankles when I was 17. It was a month before I turned 18 and I was on my way to work. I was in the car, you know, and it just happened so fast. The firewall caved in, snapped my ankles back. It happened so fast. And I just remember it was just kind of a rush. Everything was happening. I think that was the first time I even went to the ER. I just remember that moment where I was laying there, you know, the nurses and the doctors and all these people were trying to work on me because my chest had hit the steering wheel and bent the steering wheel. So they didn't know if there was internal bleeding and whatnot. And I just remember at that moment looking up at everyone and just saying, wow, I really want to do this. I want to be able to help people. They don't know if I'm a good person, bad person or what, but they're here to help me either way. And so that was the moment where I was like, I think I want to go into nursing.
Okay.
But I had a really long journey after that. I was in a wheelchair for about a year and a half. And so I had to wait until I was out. But then I started nursing right after that. Yeah.
And you're still practicing?
Yes. So okay. I've been a nurse for 16 years. I don't want to say that too loud. I started really young, really young.
That's impressive though.
Yeah. And then I've been in a lot of different fields of nursing. Trauma is my specialty, especially the OR. That was my biggest thing. I just loved it. I love trauma. I love being there during that time for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, do you think you associate it maybe because of what you went through?
Yeah. So I think that was exactly. And that the hardest time of need for somebody, right? Especially during that traumatic moment.
Yeah.
Especially in the operating room. It's just, there's something about it that I just related to. And there was a lot of hard things that I saw there too, that were very difficult to deal with. But,
how did you cope? Or how did you maintain your own mental health while working in a crisis situation or a crisis place?
Yeah, so I think it was just kind of paying attention to the bigger perspective of things, because it was very easy to get kind of drawn into what the situation is and what's happening. I mean, there was many times where, because I work trauma, a lot of people were being rushed in because it was a failed suicide attempt, or it was, you know, a car accident, or it was a child that just got in a boating accident. And it was very difficult to not get emotionally involved, because when you kind of get too emotionally involved, it takes away some of the skill that you need to be able to do your job. And so I think a lot of it was just one, just realizing there's a human component to it and just being, you know, empathetic when I needed to be, but then having to just step back and look at the situation of what's actually happening and take care of that first. And then, you know, whatever I needed to do after.
Yeah. I think any career, because you're saying that and I'm thinking of therapists, right? Because that's what I do. And I always tell my friends I wear many different hats and I can't help someone if I'm over involved, right? If I'm feeling sad for you, that's not my job. You have your friends and family to do that. So I can see the similarities where working in the OR, you need to be or wear different hats.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you've had this successful nursing career, but that's not it. You do so many things.
Yeah.
So you do car racing.
Yeah.
Correct.
I'm in motorsports. Yeah. I'm in motorsports. So I get asked this question, like, where did the motorsports come from? You know, did you grow up in a family of racers? And no. To be perfectly honest, I have zero idea where it came from. I just know since I was very little, I wanted to play with cars. Dolls were cool because that's all they kept handing me, but I really wanted cars, right? I wanted to play with cars. And I just kind of would be a closet car lover because, you know, there's nobody in my family that
Hot Wheels does any thing. Of
that. Yeah. And then growing up in high school, I kind of got in that crowd. And then it wasn't until I, you know, got into nursing, I was like, you know, when I have some money and some time, I'll be able to finally do it on my own. And that's what I did a few years, you know, after being in my career for a while, I finally got the money to do it. And I was like, all right, let's do it.
What do you have to do to become, and this is my curiosity, what did you have to do to become a race driver? Because I feel that a lot of people, it crossed people's mind, but like, I wouldn't even know where to start.
Honestly, it's just starting at the basic level of taking your car out, or some people don't even have their car. They like rent a car and just driving on the track. There's classes. So people will learn like the basics of car dynamics and safety and, you know, how to maneuver around certain things. And so it was just starting at the very bottom of like, all right, just get in the car and start driving, learn this, learn that. And honestly, to this day, I'm still learning so much. There's still so much to learn. So
it's not just driving. It's not just driving fast.
No, absolutely not.
That's what it seems like. They make it seem so easy, right?
There's so much strategy involved, and it's a mental aspect too. Like, you know, there's so many different things coming at you, right? You're not only trying to control this machine, and you're trying to predict what it's going to do through a certain turn and whatnot. But you're also, there's the competition aspect of it, right? Where you're trying to beat, you know, the next time, or you're trying to gain a position or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Also, it doesn't seem like it, but it is very physically demanding. And so it doesn't seem like, because you're just sitting there, but you know, like, I mean, F1 drivers have now talked about like how much weight they even lose during a race. But I mean, I don't have anything like that, but it's still very physically demanding because you're trying to do all these things at the same time.
Yes. And how did you find yourself actually wanting to pursue this? Because it was in your mind, right? And you're a nurse.
So I ended up getting into motorsports. Well, I had already been in motorsports a little bit, but I not really. Like I went to a couple track days here and there, but the catalyst to me deciding to actually start competing was right after I ended up breaking my back in 2017.
And we're laughing because it's like a pattern. We talked about this. I'm like, so you break something and you choose a new career.
It's So what ends up happening over and over, and honestly, I mean, this happens a lot in people's lives, like in a smaller extent or large extent. Mine just happened to be a large extent a lot of the time, where there's something that happens and it triggers like this catalyst for something else, for this like self-realization of something. And when I hurt my back, the self-realization for me was, one, life is way too short. I've been wanting to do this since I was a little girl, and I'm just going to do it. Now, I made sure that the car was like very safe. I like caged the car. I did all sorts of things to up the safety of it. So that was my way of like feeling better about, you know, going into this dangerous sport.
Possibly dying. But hey, let's talk it down. So now you broke your back and now you're into racing. Yeah. You did a bunch of competitions.
Yeah. Correct? So I did some competition and I was like the first female to have competed in this like local series here in Southern California. And I had done a NASCAR Enduro series. I was like only rookie in the top, I think, five. That one was very difficult because it was like a rubbing is racing type of racing where you just like, I mean, people were using you as brakes. So it was a lot of impact. And so I was getting hit quite a bit. Really? And it was really hard, but it was
But you did it.
I did it. Yes.
How is being a woman in a male predominant field, if you may call it that?
Yeah. You know, I get asked that question and I think it always comes from a place where like some people are like, wow, like that's, you know, it must be hard. Mm. I feel like, especially in the last few years, it's become more and more prevalent. Like a lot more females are coming out and able to like just showing up at the track and doing things. Mm-hmm. But yes, in the beginning, I would be like the only female driver out of, say, like 100 something drivers at a track day, right? Mm-hmm. So of course I would get looked at, or people would approach me and just not know how to really like talk to me, or they would just stare. Some guys would just stare. But the perspective that I looked at was like, I would do the exact same thing if I saw 100 people at a track day and one dog, right? I would be staring at the dog the entire day because I'm like, oh my God, it's something different.
It's but like, look, it's so, a girl.
Yeah, so that's how I looked
cute.
At it. That's how I looked at it. I was just like, okay, you know, maybe they're seeing something they haven't seen in a while or ever. And I just kind of was like, cool, I like this. Like, I'll, you know. Hi.
I'll keep doing it.
Yeah. But when I start talking to the guys, like, it's almost like, you know, I'm just one of the guys.
Okay.
I'm there for the same reasons.
So you don't feel pressure at all, or you don't feel excluded from anything? They treat you the same once you're in there?
You know, I don't know if I get treated the same because I've never been treated like a guy anywhere else. So I'm not really sure.
Okay. But you would definitely feel the pressure if you weren't included.
Like, yeah. Okay. I feel like for the most part, I have felt very, very, very welcomed. I feel like, you know, I also don't approach this by going in and acting like I know everything. When I don't know something, I'm very honest. I'm just like, look, I don't know. I'm here doing my best. And I think that just on a, like a personal approach, people just, you know, they tend to do better when somebody's just trying to be honest and not just showing up. And I do see that there's a lot of times where people will have that self, like that false self-confidence. They'll come off as like very, very confident, but it's actually fear.
Okay.
And so I'm just very alert to that and self-aware of that. So when I approach people, or, you know, when a guy's coming up to me for whatever reason, I'm just talking to him like normal. If I don't know something,
we are all human beings after all.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. I mean, I'm impressed because there's so, you know, nursing and car racing, but that is not all you do.
Yes.
Let's continue. We mentioned before that every time you break something or you go through a difficult health-related problem, you have this awakening or epiphany of like, I'm going to do what I want to do, right? One of your most recent struggles was that you were diagnosed with Lyme disease.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a very hard one, and I'm still kind of going through that.
Yeah. How did it start? How was your healing journey? How do you feel about it now?
So I was actually filming for a TV show. It was a car show, and I had just finished filming, and I came home, and, you know, I'm coming home after, like, some days were like 22-hour days. I was doing a lot of intense driving. I was in situations that I normally wouldn't be in. So by the time I got home, my back was hurting, which, you know, I've had back surgery, so I didn't think anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
And as the weeks went by, my back got worse and worse, to the point where I ended up having to be in a wheelchair. Anytime I left the house, I was bedridden at home. I couldn't sit up. I couldn't even do this.
Really?
I could not even sit up to like eat or anything. So more than 5 minutes a day. So as that was going on, I of course contacted my neurosurgeon. I was like, what is happening? Did I like break something? And, you know, what happened?
Yes.
And so she couldn't really figure out what was going on. Nothing really made sense. Meanwhile, a couple weeks later, I start to slowly lose my ability to actually speak and form complete sentences. So I was getting to this place where first I was just losing recall. You know, I couldn't recall like, oh, what is this called? Oh, a pen, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And so at that point, then she referred me over to a neurologist. And so by September of 2021, I was in a wheelchair and couldn't even form like a complete sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was then when one of my best friends at the time had told me, hey, remember when you lived in Wisconsin? What if you have Lyme? Like, just out of the blue,
super
what if you have
randomly.
Lyme? And I was like, you know what? At this point, you know, I had seen a neurosurgeon. She had no idea what was going on. I see a neurologist. He had no idea what's going on. A brain cancer marker was coming up on my blood work. All this stuff was coming up. I was like, why not find somebody in LA and try? I went to go and see somebody in LA. I was actually wheeled into her office, and my partner at the time gave my history because I couldn't even really speak to her. And a couple of weeks after the test, came back that I was positive with Lyme, as well as a bunch of other co-infections. Oh, and so at that point is when I had to go. I mean, I had a choice, but the choice was kind of, you know, easy, but the choice was to go on some pretty intense medical treatment, which consisted of like IVs on a weekly basis, infusions, you know, and injections on a daily basis. And it was almost like it was similar to chemo in the way that it was kind of killing off a lot of things. So you're really sick. So I spent a year doing that, and I started to lose my motor skills. Like I couldn't drive. I couldn't even hold on to certain things. I couldn't feed myself at one point. It was pretty difficult.
What would you tell yourself to not go crazy or to not lose hope? How did you handle your own mental health while going through this? Because a whole year of treatments and going to doctors telling you they don't know what's wrong with you. I mean, I can only imagine.
Yeah. So it was very difficult because one of the biggest fears I feel like I've had is like not being able to communicate my needs, you know, like that's just a fear. And then it came true. I literally could not communicate what it is that I was feeling and wanting. And so I almost felt like I was completely trapped in my body because I couldn't tell people what was going on really. And so I ended up having to utilize something that I learned, you know, a few years back and had been practicing it, but now I had to really really putting it to practice, which was, you know, being mindful of certain things, practicing gratitude and neutrality. It's something that I learned like over 10 years ago and really, really practiced. But during the Lyme situation, it was like I was in crisis. So I had to really go back down to the basics where I could sit there and listen to what the doctor was saying and what I was reading online, which was, this is your life. You just deal with it. You know, you're going to go through pain. Cause the other part was an excruciating pain. My muscles and everything as it was, you know, as I was going through treatment, it was really, really bad. I had fevers. So I had to just go back to being grateful for like what I was grateful for.
Yeah.
Which at the time was very difficult to find things because I lost everything that made me a person, right? I couldn't drive. I couldn't feed myself. I could barely dress myself. So I had to just go back to, well, at least I have shelter. At least I have food that I maybe can't eat right now, but there is food. Yeah. You know, that things could be worse.
You had to go back to the basics, like being grateful for things that, you know, I don't think about, I'm grateful because I can communicate, because that's just, we do it, right? We do it, we breathe, like we just don't think about it. But then when you can't, it's like being when you're sick. You don't appreciate that you're not stuffy nose, and then you're like, oh my God, I can't breathe.
Exactly.
as simple as that.
Exactly. And so it goes back to shifting your awareness. And that's one thing that I learned a few years ago, but then really had to like practice during the Lyme situation. It was just shifting my awareness to what it is that I wanted to shift it to. And so I could just sit there and be in that place of, oh yeah, I'm sick. I'm not going to be able to do anything or whatnot. Or I could just put my awareness on, okay, let me see, what am I feeling? What is actually happening? Because I couldn't go anywhere. Yeah. So I had no choice but to sit there and kind of get to know and understand what was happening from the inside.
Yeah.
So then maybe I could be a little bit more appreciative or be more aware that when I felt that shift happen where I felt better one day or for an hour, I felt better. Then it was like, I was really appreciative of it. Mm-hmm. And so that just kind of grew more and more. And the other thing was the neutrality portion, where it's very difficult to look at a situation objectively and not say something's good or bad.
Okay.
And so that's something that I've been practicing for years in my life. And that was a time where I had to say, because anyone can sit there and be like, oh, not being able to drive is bad.
Mm-hmm.
But like, is it? Or is that just the situation at the time?
Exactly.
The situation is I can't drive myself. However, there are people I could call upon and services I could use to be able to get me to the doctors. And so I had to go to that point.
It really shifts your mind, your perspective, and opens it up to possibilities.
Yeah.
So we are on our third take. now with coffee. We had to take a quick break because LA weather, you know, it's just not being very friendly today.
I know, like the one time you come into LA, it is not sunny and not warm, right? That's weird.
I mean, the view's still nice, so we'll take it, right?
It is gorgeous.
So going back to where we were, you done nursing.
Yes, motorsports.
Car racing. You went through a horrible Lyme disease experience. Overcame it, obviously. If not, you wouldn't be here. And you also do acting. Let's talk about that. That's a fun one.
Yeah. So as I was getting more and more into motorsports, I was posting things on social media because I was just coming from a place of like, look, I don't know what I'm doing. Why don't you just follow along? Maybe you don't know what you're doing, or maybe you do, you know? And so as I was doing that more and more, I think I just kind of got some attention. And so I ended up on a couple of TV shows. And that was the first time I was really in front of a camera.
Okay.
Besides like my phone. Mm-hmm. And was like,
besides Instagram?
Yeah. Besides Instagram stories and TikTok. I was like, I actually really like this. This is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And so I started to pursue that last year where I got in front of the camera more and more.
Okay.
I had like acting classes and all sorts of things. And I started to do that more and I really liked it. I wrapped up my first commercial with a large car manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited about that.
Nice. Yeah. So you're going to become famous.
I don't know. I don't know about that, but at least
now you have to say it.
I'm having a blast. Oh, you should see my manifestation journal. Yes. It has all sorts of things. Whatever will happen will happen. I'm setting the intention of just having fun along the way, because a lot of times what ends up happening with me is I get so laser focused on something. Mm-hmm. So I've just been changing that perspective of, instead of setting these like goals and then sticking really hard to them, I'm setting these intentions of like what it is I want to accomplish and giving myself some leeway, making sure I still go through that
just
path.
Being flexible.
But be a lot more flexible, because I was not like that before. No.
You're absolutely like, not. Yeah, that's a new thing.
That's new. I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah. So how do you keep yourself mindful nowadays after all you've been through? Do you practice anything at all? I mean, you just mentioned journaling, which is great.
Yeah. So journaling, because it's a great way for you to be able to like reflect back on something, even if it's not that same day. I actually do like third person journaling. So I will, I actually do all sorts of kinds of journaling. I like writing. Something about writing on paper and pen is just, you know, it's magical. But a couple of the things that I mentioned earlier, I know we've been hearing that word, you know, mindfulness, just getting thrown around, but there's a true power to it. There's a reason. So mindfulness is the art of being able to take a look at something objectively and not, you know, from a judgmental place. And so it could be you're drinking coffee and you're thinking about just that coffee, you know, and you're really just like savoring that coffee and you're in that moment.
I'm definitely enjoying the heat.
I am 100%
right now.
Enjoying
this. I don't even have to drink it.
Yes.
Should have held coffees in all my interviews.
And then the other aspect is the like gratefulness. And I know we hear that all the time. Be grateful. And it sometimes is very difficult when you're in a rough place. But even being able to be grateful about one thing in your life, what it's doing is it's shifting your perspective and teaching you how to shift your awareness. So then when you're able to do it in a smaller sense where you're like, I'm grateful for this coffee, you know, the world is coming down around you, but you can be grateful for one thing. It teaches you how to be able to shift your perspective more and more.
Exactly.
And then the neutrality aspect that I talked about earlier. Where that one's a difficult one.
That seems hard.
I do it a lot when I'm in a conversation, especially when I'm in a very difficult one. I actually view difficult situations and conversations in a weird way where I actually like it, because it's like I get to practice. So I look at it from that point of view whenever there's something that's very challenging happening. Instead of me being like, oh, I can't believe this is happening, I'm like, great. Like, this is an opportunity for me to actually practice. And that's where being neutral is like where you're able to look at something objectively and not be swayed, right?
Exactly.
Like one way or another. And it's really hard to do that in political or other conversations, but starting small, like the weather, right?
I'm grateful it stopped raining.
But some people could be like, oh, I can't believe it's raining. This is horrible. It's my wedding day. And
wait, isn't it good luck though in your wedding day?
I think so.
Is that a thing?
But right? Like
it's all about perspective. It's either the worst or it's luck.
Because the farmer down the street could have been praying for rain for weeks or months and now he's getting it and it's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really just a shift of perspective. So even starting off with something that small, that's how I used to start. I just started with the traffic. Okay. Traffic is traffic.
That's a hard one.
Traffic is
traffic. Not gonna lie.
You know, I actually enjoy it now because that's my me time. Like that is the one time that I get to be, even if I'm going to be late, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Like I get to do whatever I want to listen to a podcast, listen to or talk to a friend on the phone, Bluetooth, and all of that. But it's just, it's being able to shift your perspective in smaller instances when, like during normal life, because then when a crisis comes about, then it's going to be easier since you've practiced it.
Exactly.
It's kind of difficult to, you know, build a parachute as you're falling down, right? Exactly. Like it's easier to do it when there's not a whole lot going on. So that's
just
usually
build on it and then create a new habit for yourself.
And there was many times in my life where, you know, so many different things were happening. And that was the time where I woke up that, hey, something needs to change in my life. But even after that, you know, that situation passed and everything went back to normal and got easy, I stayed with it. And I really practiced the mindfulness and just being very grateful for everything and trying to shift my perspective as many times as I could. Yeah. Because then it really, I mean, I truly believe that that is 100% the reason why I am where I am today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're in a great place today. Or at least that's my impression.
Yes.
We all have our struggles, but I feel that you're doing pretty amazing.
I do. I feel the same way.
Yeah. Now, for someone that might be listening, that might be going through struggles or health problems or just a difficult moment in life, what would be your advice?
Yeah.
Your message.
I think the biggest things that I would tell people if they're in the middle of it, they're in the thick of things, is don't just get too granular and don't just look at all like the details. Back up a little bit and look at the general sense of what's happening and just try to be grateful for what's going on. Even if it seems like everything is going down around you, there's something to be grateful for, and just hold on to that one thing and try to build on that and try to change your perspective and shift your perspective as much as possible.
Great. Well, I loved our conversation. I loved our coffee.
Yes.
We're gonna go ahead and finish that, but for now we're gonna leave you. Thank you for watching. Don't forget to subscribe. If you have anything to say, please leave us a comment, and I will see you next week. Bye. We wait.